Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of the Believe in UCLA Football Podcast. My name is James Williams, a reporter and editor for the Orange County Register and the Southern California News Group. And as always, I'm joined here by my co-host, former UCLA linebacker, Josh Woods. What's going on, man?
You know, just excited or, you know, finally getting this schedule, getting ready for next year. We've been getting some almost surprising, new guys and then the portal. So it's like we're way too early, but like excited for the next season.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. At first I was like, oh, what are we going to talk about this week? I don't really know. And then a bunch of stuff just kind of happened over the last 2 days, including your birthday. Happy birthday, Josh.
Thank you, man.
Did you do anything fun? Anything special for your birthday or just another day at the office for you?
You know, kind of just another day, still training, off season grind, and then just spend time family. I think this is like one of the first birthdays I'm like, dang, I'm getting old. But then I remember.
You're like 23?
I just turned 25. See?
Oh, okay. Mm.
But then I remember, I was like, Stenson Bennett is 25.
Yeah. I mean, he has two national championships, though. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, dang, maybe I'm not that old. I could still be playing college football.
Which is kind of crazy to think because you did five?
Yeah, I was at UCLA for 5 years.
Yeah, I guess when you put it that way.
I was done in 2019, and Stenson Bennett is 25.
It was like just getting started. That's crazy to think about.
Yeah, it's crazy the ages and direction college football is in right now. Especially with the holdbacks from high school, and then now with this portal, with COVID year, all this like eligibility. Seems like NCAA is being way more lenient now than how they used to be, where they're like, they're granting guys 1-2 extra years, 3 extra years. But like before,
it was super strict.
There were some guys were like, they had to like really fight for a fifth year at times. And it's like, yeah, now they're like, oh, you played 6.5 and you got hurt that whole nother year. Oh, right. You know, like you didn't really play this year. What were you doing this whole nother year? You know what I'm saying? Where like before it was like, if you played any game past game 6, automatic year gone.
Well, it was like, even if you transferred, you were going to lose. You were doing it at the risk of losing a year, right? Like you just.
Yeah. Majority of guys were sitting out a year.
Right. Just to move. They were willing to give up a year just to move somewhere else.
Yep. Even if they had like legitimate reasons, family reasons, like all these types of things, it did not matter to the NCAA.
That's crazy. And that's why a lot of people still aren't very happy with the NCAA, that's a whole different podcast that we would have to have one day. But speaking of which, of those who still did have some COVID eligibility left but decided to forego that, no surprise here, Zach Charbonnet does make it official. He is moving on from UCLA, headed for the draft. I think it's without a doubt he's a day two guy. I think there's a few names that I heard that aren't, you know, like you kind of thought Blake Corum was going to maybe be in it and stuff like that. Obviously, with him getting injured, that changes that a little bit, and he's coming back.
But that also interesting though, with you bringing him up, I saw that they had a like a NIL collective thing of bringing those guys. It's like it was like four of them from that Michigan team back for another year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Blake Corum was one of them. I think it was a receiver, a lineman, and somebody else. Yeah, and they put together that collective. I've seen they had raised over $100,000 so far to bring those four guys back for another year. So, again, it's like this whole NIL, what is the future? What does it look like? Is this what we're going to start seeing?
We're starting to see it, yeah.
Guys be like, I'll do another year of college because I'm going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be any uncertainties when – you can risk it all, enter name a draft, not get picked up, and then just be, left out. So, yeah.
I think it's when you – the same thing I think is kind of what I heard about Cam Rising. There was something about him, like maybe some truck company or something, really got behind trying to bring him back. And this was even maybe some rumblings I had kind of heard even prior to him getting hurt in the Rose Bowl game. And I'm not sure how serious the injury is that might keep him out. But I think when he did get injured, and when you think about a Blake Corum, for example, I think with those injuries, it's kind of hard. Like your draft stock kind of gets cut some anyways, just because you're hurt and people are just going to see it as like, here, let's just take a fourth round flyer on Blake Corum, even though he would have probably gotten in the second round if he's healthy, but people aren't willing to invest second round money until they see how a guy does. So if you can kind of get some money through the NIL that way and stay another year, you're already familiar with that facility, you know, those trainers, athletic trainers and stuff, strength and conditioning coach, they can work with you. You can rehab, you can come back stronger than ever. Ideally, you know, even if you play like the last six games of the season or something and have a strong performance and get right back into draft, draft positioning there and look good along the way. So there's a few of those names that are out there. You know, obviously this was just kind of treated as a bonus year as it was, and a surprising as it was getting Charbonnet for the past year that we had him for, just because a lot of people thought he was going to be gone after that year in 2021. So good on Charbonnet. We'll see where he goes. I'll be kind of following along with where he goes. I think it was just kind of interesting that he waited so long. I mean, he could have probably declared at any point, but he just finally came out with an announcement. Obviously, Dorian doesn't make an announcement, but I guess because we kind of just know. You know, even CJ Shroud was kind of another one where, like, it got up to it. And I think some people were saying, oh, maybe that, like, NIL might actually be working to keep him. But I'm like, it would take a whole lot of money to keep somebody who's going to be a first-round guy, even in the first half of the first round. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, potential top five pick. So,
yeah, yeah. So, looking ahead to the future, obviously the transfer portal has treated UCLA well, including landing guys like Zach Charbonnet. They go and get a guy, a local kid, you know, obviously a mutual agreement here. Kyle Ford, the receiver from Orange Lutheran, if I'm not mistaken, played at USC for, was it like a year or two? Is at UCLA. And we've seen some guys have success making that jump. What were your thoughts when you kind of heard the whole thing?
No, he was there for like, what, 4 years?
Has it been 4 years? I don't, there's like so many receivers.
I'm pretty sure sure he's the same class as Ryan Helinski.
Wow, so I think he has, so? Oh, because think, they were on the same, okay. That was the primary guy then, huh?
Mm-hmm, exactly. So okay. I think he has been around. So it's like, we're not getting a young freshman, not like a sophomore, or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he should be a seasoned vet coming into the team.
He was listed as a redshirt junior last year. He came in 2019, played 2020, 21, and then 22. So he's just coming in on his Well, he redshirted, so he has a year. So he has 2 years because he has a COVID year. So he still has 2 years, I think. But we'll see. But still good. I didn't know that he's from Corona. I didn't know that.
Majority of people are from the Inland Empire, and they go to trendy league schools. And, yes. And everybody forgets where the talent really is.
Right, right.
But, yeah, I think we did such a better job this year. I always say we because it's always we
mm-hmm.
as UCLA of replacing what we lost. I think this year better than last year. Last year we did bring, you know, Jake Bobo, Titus in. But this year it seems like we got an arsenal of weapons
mm-hmm.
Coming in with the running backs that we got, with the receivers that we got.
J. Mike from Cal being the other one. I think he's an underclassman, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think he's like a redshirt sophomore, but he's like he made the all freshman. No, I think he's a redshirt freshman, and he was like the Pac-12 all freshman team this year or something. So
that's going to be great to go along, you know, mm-hmm. with
for Dante.
Whatever, like we thought, yeah, like I said, mm-hmm. if Dante's started, just having a good group around him,
mm-hmm.
Bringing in, you know, a veteran tight end along with the tight ends that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, offensive line, we're just all the running back. Like, I think like we reloaded and almost more weapons than before.
You know what? So I thought about this literally like an hour ago, and I was like, man, Kyle Ford, J. Mike, like they're getting receivers. I'm like, when did they really ever get receivers? I don't know if I really ever like, I don't know if it's just because like you had Kyle and Greg there, and then you had Logan Loya and Matt Sykes as kind of those guys right behind them. Chase Cota. I think it was just Chase Cota and Kyle Phillips really kind of had the starting spots locked down for some time. Or at least it felt that way. So there really wasn't like a big name that kind of came out. But now that those guys are gone, Matt Sykes is in the transfer portal. Jake Bobo came, had some success, and is now moving on after just 1 year. He's going to be, you know, we'll see what his NFL future is going to be. So you still have Titus there. Kaz is gone. So you need offensive weapons, right? I think this was just a year you needed to really reload, and I think they kind of did that.
Yeah, well, we might not have a Charbonnet, but, you know, with the stable that they have mm-hmm. collectively, they should be able to have the same production level. Yeah, and I feel like this is the most options that Chip has had mm-hmm. at UCLA in the system. And that's majority of the guys that are leaving this year were offensive guys. I mean, there are like, you know, we're not leaving out the Mo Ostlings and the Stephen right. Blaylocks, but I feel like offense, because it's been guys that have been there
for so long. You know,
for so long
mm-hmm.
that it was like, what are we going to do? And I think that they have replenish and now have the answers. And like I said, I feel like it's Chip has so many weapons that he has to be successful going forward with the season. And as we look ahead, when we're going to look at the schedule, I think
mm-hmm.
it's set up again for UCLA to be successful and get over the hump that we thought maybe that UCLA was supposed to get over this year.
And I think it's really built, you know, whoever the quarterback's going to be, but especially if it is Dante, again, whoever, I guess it doesn't matter who it is, but they're really set up just for success. Like, I mean, there's going to be a question mark just because the guy at quarterback is going to be, is someone other than Dorian, but every other position, I mean, again, we'll have to see how everyone gels and fits in, but just talent wise, I think everything's set, kind of like what you're saying. But I am kind of curious because this was something I thought about earlier in the week too, was that I wanted to ask you about. And I'm glad you kind of reminded me based on what you said there, was especially as someone who's played defense at UCLA, if you're seeing a lot of these, you know, obviously, I mean, some will look at the defense and say, maybe that's kind of the point. That's something that needs to be worked on, right? And the offense was never a worry. But now that the offense is kind of not really maybe a worry, but maybe there's growing pains there, or maybe it just continues to move along smoothly. But like, what are the defensive guys thinking right now? Like, I haven't really waited out to see who, like, is the defense now the veteran unit on the team, but it's just kind of like, does the defense know they got to kind of have to step it up because there's more losses on the offensive side of the ball? Like, is it kind of a kick in the butt for them? I would think on defense, maybe.
I think for the defense, it's like a look in the mirror type, you know, type of time with a lot of that front seven guys returning. You're losing some of the back end. So a guy like Darius Masao stepping up and leading and addressing the issues that they had, especially late in the season, being able to stop the run, being able to get off the field on third downs, finishing on pass rush, those types of things are the things that you are actively bringing up every week, having, you know, defensive player meetings about it, those types of situations, because it's almost expected that a new offense, like a new quarterback and almost a whole new offense, is going to have growing pains.
At some point, they're just going to have to. That's
just part of it, you know.
Yeah.
With the, you know, because a lot of it is about chemistry and like that stuff has to be built. And we saw with Dorian what experience and what time can do and the development, you know. So with a younger group and with a younger quarterback, those things are kind of expected to have, is those growing pains and figure things out and figure out the style and, you know, the quarterback getting used to Chip getting used to the quarterback and the different weapons. And because you don't have the old reliable of, you know, Dorian plays this a certain way, Charbonnet likes these types of runs on these types of downs. These schemes, you know, our O-line, the way that they rotate is best. Like all that stuff has to be figured out again. And defense having like I said, a lot of those, you know, the Murphy twins, Fatu, and Darius, and, you know, maybe a few other pieces around them and trying to figure that out. Like, but having so many of those core guys returning, they are expected to anchor and, you know, be like, we need to hold it down for the young offense.
They're not going to score. They may not score 45 points every night. They may not, you know, be the ones bailing you out every other game or whatever. You know, it might be you guys that's going to have to do that for the offense this year a little bit, you know.
And I have an experience of, you know, having those going through those growing pains and being a defensive, just like, seems like you're on the field a lot. You're waiting for the offense to figure it out. And those are the times where you really can't get frustrated. You have to do all you can and try to hold it down for the offense. And when they figure out, and when it clicks, when the offense clicks, you want to be doing good too. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to be falling apart when the offense figures it out. You know, everybody wants to grow and peak at the end and be clicking, you know, all together. So I think that's the mindset of the defense. And especially like, figuring out the back end, you know, that's going to be the biggest growing pain for the UCLA defense is the DBs.
Yeah.
Cause it's especially losing your two starting safeties. That's, those are essentially almost, you know, you know, like the linebacker is like the quarterback, but like top down, those are the eyes. They see everything in front of you. They make calls. That's why I said when we had Q Lake on, the difference it was when he was playing and he wasn't playing. Having somebody back there with experience that knows how to call out looks, how to make calls and in those different situations, where having somebody back there with experience and IQ really makes a big difference in defense. So that's, you know, the one thing the defense has to figure out. But other than that, it's a mature front seven, so they should be stopping the run and getting after the quarterback regardless.
No doubt about it. I want to just switch over to give a shout out. Pro Football Focus, they do some college grading and stuff as well. I don't know if you saw the graphic, but they had Mafi and John Gaines, both of them. I guess, I mean, the UCLA Twitter account says they're the best duo in the nation. I don't know the, you know, I don't know where all the other guards ranked to know that. But just on the, just based on what the UCLA guys is, Mafi was ranked number 3 in terms of guards in the nation. And John Gaines was number 8. So that's pretty impressive. And I think that goes to show you, like, you know, you're losing your offensive weapons, Kaz, DTR, Charbonnet, but you're losing those guys on the offensive line too. And that kind of happened last year when you are the year prior when you had Sean Ryan and some of those guys leave on the offensive line. But now you're losing 2 more. And it's kind of like the offense there's going to be some hiccups and some different things they'll have to work through. But I did want to give a shout out to Mafi and Gaines. Both of them are going to be in the NFL draft. So with that said, Josh, we will jump into the schedule here. I don't know if you have that in front of you.
I got it in front of me right now. I got the one they put on the Petzl website. What everybody's schedule lined up.
So just even some of the things that I saw looking at it, I don't know if you noticed this, and it was just kind of barely brought to my attention before we started recording. So, I mean, you try to look for all the different interesting things about the schedule, and I didn't even see this one. It was so obvious after it's pointed out to you. I don't think there's any back-to-back home games for UCLA on the schedule. Nope. Road home.
Only the back-to-back away games.
Yeah. And where is that? I'm trying to.
Oregon State.
Oh yeah, Stanford. Yeah, there you go. October 14th and 21st. Yeah. So. I don't know. We'll start there. Do you think that matters at all? Like, I mean, is it hard to get consistent or to just be dialed in? I think that was one of the advantages I feel like UCLA had this year, even when they were traveling. Maybe it wasn't even that far of a travel for some of the games they had. But it's kind of like I felt there was some, especially like even the non-conference schedule. Like, I mean, like the last 2 years, they've had 3 straight home games to start the season in non-conference play. They don't have that this year. I mean, the road game's in San Diego, so it's not that far. But like, just for some of the other road games, do you think it maybe is a little bit of a disadvantage that they don't have maybe 2 games at home where they don't have to worry about travel and they can kind of like just dial in and maybe just have some consistency or something like that? Or could you read into anything with that little fact for the schedule?
I mean, they'll have a consistency of the home and away.
Well, yeah.
Having that consistency can kind of help, you know, so you're not getting so used to being on the road and so used to being at home and then it being a whole new experience. So I don't think that. I think the thing that I personally would love if this was my schedule, is no cold games.
Yeah,
I saw at the end of the season, which kind of is bad setting up this being the last season of the Pac-12 going to the Big Ten next year.
Yeah,
that they are not, because
that's true.
They're going to be treated. Yeah, this is like the most love you can get for a LA team.
Mm-hmm.
Latest game you have.
That your coldest cold. Game might be Colorado.
It's Colorado, no? And that's,
well,
and
that's a home game. Yeah.
I'm saying you have Utah at really the end of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be nice. Oregon State in the middle shouldn't be too cold by then. Mm-hmm. Wazoo at home.
I think
Arizona in the winter and then or later in the year and going across street to SC. So you're going to be that's about as close as 3 home games in a row.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, the last half of the schedule, I mean, you're going to Arizona, which is a hop, skip and a jump. From California, so it's not like it's too far. And then Cal's at home, USC's down the street. It's really still not that bad. It's still not that bad of a schedule. Obviously, so when people see that non-conference schedule, the first thing they think about is that 100-degree weather and some of those early games and that whole mess. So some people are like, please 5 o'clock games, please, 5 p.m., make them late games. Some of those games, maybe not the Coastal Carolina one, but I can see, North Carolina Central is probably gonna be on the Pac-12 network. It's probably gonna be at 1 p.m. You know, that's not gonna be a favorable just for the fans in terms of, having it be the perfect weather for you. But I think one thing for me that looks nice, and I think they benefited from this last year too, when they had Washington and Utah, and we'll talk about Washington here in a minute, but you get Utah to start the season, and you or to start conference play. You can tell me about that in a minute, but I like that there's a bye week after that because you can kind of regroup if it's a physical game, which it probably will be. You can kind of recover and you kind of, you know, kind of rally the troops if you need to, if that's the case coming out of that game, and get ready for the rest of the schedule. But what do you think about the bye week there before Utah and it being at Utah? Because they have not won since, I wrote it down in my story, they have not won in Salt Lake City since 2015.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Oh, were you there? Was that one of the, was that freshman, the last time you played in Utah?
My freshman, my redshirt freshman.
Oh, no, you guys would play Utah every year, right?
Yeah, Utah was, yeah.
So you were probably there like one other time or something?
Yeah. Besides SC having the earliest bye week along Wazoo, that sets up for, I mean, an A-game stretch, which shouldn't, hopefully isn't too bad. And it is always nice having a bye after a physical game. Sometimes I feel like we used to have a bye after our third non-conference, but at the same time, we would also have a tougher non-conference. I feel like we always had a bigger, you know, we had
when you have Oklahoma, Cincinnati, San Diego State, or something,
Texas A&M, like you know, a bigger school in that first three, having a bye after that was usually nice to, but Utah being the toughest of the first four opponents, I think that's going to be great. I always like open up with a physical game in the Pac-12.
So you like having Utah early?
I like having a physical game to open up Pac-12. Mm-hmm. Utah, I do like playing Utah early in the season rather than later, because I feel like Utah usually goes to their going things in the beginning. It seems like every year they get written off in the beginning of the season.
Yes.
They have like a random, some random loss or like,
UCLA was that loss for them last year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some close games, and everybody writes Utah off, and then they just start clicking midway, and at the end, like, you do not want to play them, and you do not want to go to Utah. So us playing Utah early, I think, is great. I remember I feel like we used to always have, like, Stanford, and that's always, like, nice to – you're going into Pac-12 play, you know it's going to be physical. It's a, you know, great way to get in, and, you know, what you're going to experience is probably one of your most physical games in all of Pac-12. So I think, that's going to be great. And then with the bye, you know, hopefully nobody's, you know, like similar to this year, not really anybody banged up. And then you're able to fly from there.
Yeah, able to fly from there. Let's see. So I think, if there's no, if there's any game you'd want to have the bye week after, it's the Utah game. They do not have Washington. And they don't have Oregon on the schedule. So they do not see Bo Nix. They do not see Michael Penix and the Huskies at all this year, which is definitely a bonus. And part of me is like, whoa, like, I wonder how that would have worked out if they had this schedule last year. But everyone's like, they still would have lost to Oregon State, because Oregon State was pretty good. But I don't know. I think they could have beat Oregon State last year.
It'd have been a pretty even game. I think we're honestly, I think, very similar to Oregon State in some ways. Their run attack, their trickery on offense, and then their defense does play hard. I'd say that. So it's going to be, even though people think like the tougher of the two is just having UW and Oregon, sleepers are Oregon State is one of the, I think, my dark horse for the Pac-12 next year. And while you never know, Wazoo.
You never know, right?
Yeah, you never know how that game could turn out.
Well, and like part of me too, I tweeted out when I first kind of saw the schedule. My reaction was no Oregon, no Washington, you know, and I named the quarterbacks just as I did. And I said instead they're playing Washington, which has Cam Ward, who is his first year in the Pac-12 last year, playing at a Power 5 level, maybe takes a step this year. And then you're going to have DJU playing at Oregon State potentially as the starter. So it's like, if he's confident and moving well, it's like, I mean, it might not be any easier than it was, you know, it might just be the same. So go ahead.
The Pac-12 is the quarterback conference. of the year next year.
Right.
Without a doubt. This is arguably the top, could be the top five quarterbacks in the country, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
And you have something, you have sleeping quarterbacks like you said, Cam Ward. You have
DJU.
You have DeLore from Arizona.
Mm-hmm. I'd be curious to see if Cam Rising will be healthy for the Utah game that early in the season. I have to check how serious the injury is, but he might not even be ready for that game. So,
but regardless, they're going to have a.
But they're going to have another guy.
They're going to have a run game.
Oh, yeah.
And that defense is going to be, you know, that defense. So,
and then they also play. I haven't done the math, but I'm pretty sure only there were three new head coaches in the Pac-12, and they play all of them, if I remember correctly. So it's going to be Troy Taylor for Stanford. It's going to be Deion Sanders, who's going to be coming to the Rose Bowl when Colorado is there on the 28th. And then you're going to have Kenny Dillingham at on November 12th at the Rose Bowl when Arizona State comes to town. And maybe he'll hug it out with old Dante Moore and say what could have been, but he's a Bruin, so it is what it is. So you'll get all the new head coaches in there, and maybe those are games, you know, that can work out in UCLA's favor. But you never know. I mean, if you saw what, again, Washington and Oregon, who had Kalen DeBoer and Dan Lanning for Oregon, and again, Kalen DeBoer for Washington, when you had those guys be in their first year and still have successful years the way that they did, you know, I mean, just because you're a first year coach, that doesn't mean anything anymore. You could still be, Lincoln Riley is a veteran guy, but as well, yeah. But first year in the Pac-12 and
like Oregon wise, with your coach leaving, not getting fired, that's also a big difference that, you know, usually when a school's coach leaves for another program rather than getting fired because they weren't good. But yeah, I do think those games are better for UCLA though.
Mm-hmm.
With Stanford, Arizona State, Colorado still, I almost don't have any expectation for Colorado. I don't know.
And they kind of have a tough schedule. I think they start with TCU, who was in the national championship game to start the season.
And I think at Nebraska next.
They have Nebraska, yeah. Yeah. It's not easy. It's not gonna be an easy schedule for sure. As we were talking about that, I'm looking at, you have Oregon State, you know, that's a game maybe they win, maybe not. It's at Oregon State, and they're gonna have a new stadium, new renovated stadium or whatever the case may be. And then you're going to have Stanford, which should be a winnable game. I'm not even sure what the quarterback's going to be. Colorado, we just said, you know, we'll find out what they are. And maybe that gives you a little bit of confidence. Let's say you win those two games, put you in a good position to go into the Arizona game, which, you know, they've gotten some guys.
That needs to be a must win after what happened.
It could very easily be like, this is a must win game. Like this, it's going to have all the makings of that. It's going to be probably the prime game on for the Pac-12 that week. You know, it could be. And, you know, UCLA is going to have to show up. So. I don't know. Any other kind of thoughts on the schedule? Coastal Carolina is one for me. Grayson McCall, who's kind of been leading the way at quarterback for them. Obviously, their coach isn't there anymore. But Grayson McCall was in the transfer portal, left the transfer portal, and is going to be at Coastal Carolina. I think he was injured too. So maybe he's not even ready for that game. But it'd be great to see him, and would be a good challenge for UCLA early on to face a good quarterback. So we'll see about him. But anything else kind of stand out to you?
I think just looking at, I mean, all the Pac-12 schedules, the one that just is different than everybody else's SC because they have that week zero game, which allows them to have two bye weeks.
Yeah. They got the bye week at the end of the season.
And with that bye week, which if they're at the top could take them into the Pac-12 championship. But they do have a real tough stretch before that bye week. So they would need that regardless. Having Notre Dame, Utah, Cal,
back to back, I think,
and then UW, Oregon, UCLA in that order, which is a tough stretch.
They're gonna have to earn it, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I'm excited because I think, like I said, like a lot of teams in the Pac-12 are loaded with talent, reloaded, transfer portal, top recruits, coaches, and like I said, quarterbacks. There is no clear-cut team that's just head and shoulders above anybody else. I think everybody is right there, and in Pac-12 fashion, I expect us to beat each other to mess up the chances for the playoffs, which sucks, but there's just so much talent spread out that, you know, I hope that, you know, one team can stay consistent and beat everybody. Hopefully UCLA, and we make the playoffs for the first time. That would be amazing. But it's just like the way the schedule is, those Pac-12 after dark games, something is always bound to happen. And this is UCLA's last year before going into the Big Ten. And I think it's going to be fireworks.
And UCLA does benefit from not having any of those wacky Thursday, Friday games. They're all Saturday games. So you don't find yourself in the middle of any of that kind of mess, which I think is a benefit to them, because that always kind of throws the schedule off, I feel. But we'll see. I'm excited to see how that kind of plays out. All right, Josh. And so before we go, we are going to answer some questions from the good folks on Twitter who sent in some questions. They're always good to us, so I want to make sure we do get some of their questions. And as always, make sure you guys are checking out the description. Regardless, whatever your favorite audio or podcast platform is, we'll have links. You can find our Twitters on there. You can find the show Twitter on there. You can feel free to reach out with other questions, reactions, and let us know what you want us to talk about or want to hear us talk about. And we will try and accommodate you guys with that. And it'll give us, you know, some good ideas, especially when we get into the off season. If there's some bigger picture stuff you want us to look at, or if there's someone in particular maybe you want us to talk to, let us know and we'll see what we can do for you guys. With that being said, Josh, we had quite a few questions, but these two, I believe, are good ones. The first one comes from Sidelines UCLA on Twitter. They ask, any reason why we don't have a spring game anymore? Would it be a great way to generate money and fan support for the team in the upcoming season? I feel like we might have talked about this, but I forgot. You were on the team. You've gone through some of this whole. Why is there no spring game again?
You're saying because now it's like a spring showcase and not a.
I feel like hasn't it not always? I've only ever known it to be a spring showcase, but I see like Oklahoma on ESPNU doing a spring game or something.
There are times where you split the team up and do a game. We did that the last spring we were with Adidas. We did a whole blue versus white game. Like it was like we wore game jerseys. Like it was two different teams.
And this was at the Rose Bowl or the other field?
No, this was at
Drake,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think my first one, it was pretty much just a practice in the Rose Bowl. But you have live scrimmages in there, so kind of similar to the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Second one, I don't know. I don't remember that one.
Yeah. I mean, there,
third one was a game. Mm-hmm. But the thing with when Chip came, we only did showcase. I think, honestly, one of the main reasons is we never had enough bodies during spring ball.
Yeah.
That's like, we barely, with people leaving the program, like, especially that first year, I couldn't even participate. I was coming off of a shoulder. So I was in the yellow. Caleb Wilson was coming off his. He was in the yellow. Like, we had, like, key players still in, like, you know, not being able to fully participate. With that, so injuries along with people that get hurt during spring ball, along with the players that got cut, the players that medically retired, the players that were transferring out, and the fact that I don't know how many people graduating and that, like, we think about it, you don't have all the incoming classes, so I don't.
True. You're just trying to make it through the spring.
Yeah, because I don't even remember that many like early enrollees at that time. Like,
Well, I mean, now, yeah, the way they have it now.
We had some JUCOs,
yeah.
Like at the time, like maybe we had some JUCO guys, but like we didn't have enough people to do a spring game. So it was just a practice.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
It's been that way since. And I think they do it on Drake to, you know, bring fans and people on campus because, you know,
that without way, having them in the facility, or there's really nowhere to sit when you're in the facility and there's the two fields.
Because in the past, UCLA has had it at the Home Depot Center.
No, it's not even StubHub. It's the
Dignity Health Sports
Center Arena.
There was a game.
Yeah.
I remember when I was getting recruited that they had their spring game there.
And where the Galaxy play. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty lit. And then it was at the Rose Bowl a few times. And then now it's been at Drake since Chip's got there. Well, since I think Morris last year, and then since Chip's been there, it's stayed there. And yeah, a game definitely was more fun than Chip's practice.
It might have just been. So that's an interesting point. I guess it was just kind of like that first year when he's just trying to get in a rhythm, and based on like where you guys were at health wise and roster wise, just because of who's in, who's out, with the coaching change, it was just like, we're just trying to practice at this point. We're just trying to see what we have before we even, you know, we didn't have enough to make two teams, to split up two teams to do anything, I guess. And it just kind of stuck, right? So it just sounds like he just did the first year and just never looked back from it.
Yeah, I don't know how well he was doing at Oregon, but that's what it is. I mean, gotcha. As an older guy, you're just trying to get it over with anyways.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
If we're being completely honest, and I can say what I want now, I mean, I was hurt the past because I didn't have to do nothing. But I just remember being like, bro, like we are out here doing live. We have no bodies. Everybody's banged up. Like if you're a young guy, it's great. You're learning. Yeah, it's right. You're getting better. But when you're an older guy, it's like, let me stay healthy. You know, let me not risk, you know, going out here with a freshman on here and, you know, somebody rolls up on an ankle or a knee.
Do you think maybe because there is a quarterback position, and I kind of hate saying this because it's one position and it's, you know, I mean, but it is quarterback, but it's like, do you think you maybe want to try and have a spring game, or maybe they do a little bit more live, or they do something a little bit more in practice than what they usually have? Cause you want to try and get as many live reps for these quarterbacks and like see what you have and what they can do. And
that's the thing with a quarterback battle, expect a lot more live reps.
Right.
That's just a given. So they are going to try to get as many competitive periods as possible with the different quarterbacks, with different units in with their, you know, so that, I mean, that's an expected.
Right. Just because at the very least, you need to have multiple guys ready, you know, aside from whoever you decide your starters are going to be, you need some other guys. Like, you know, we talked about chemistry being a thing. And I did see, you know, there had been like this whole thing, especially for me, wondering about like Ethan Garber's, if he's going to transfer. When Kyle Ford said he was coming to UCLA, a lot of UCLA guys were in Kyle Ford's mentions. There's a lot of other people in the mentions that were USC fans and whatnot, but Garbers was among those, like, you know, like, hey, let's go, like, let's do it. So it doesn't look like he's going anywhere, and he's going to be with UCLA this year, and of course right in the mix competing for that quarterback job. But yeah, anything else on the spring game thing before I get to the next question?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, cool. The next one comes in from Jack on Twitter. Not the former CEO, Jack, but good buddy for the UCLA community, Jack. He asked, what are three things you and Woodsy think need to happen this upcoming season to truly succeed in the Big Ten? I'll start first with one of them. I think they're already doing a good job, as we've kind of talked about already in this episode, but just over the last couple episodes, is recruiting and bringing in some people and, you know, getting these 5-star, 4-star guys, like getting talent, and showing that they can replenish a roster now that they're out of that phase that Josh just got done talking about of, we're just trying to see what we have and make the most of it. Now that you're able to replenish and show you can replenish, just kind of making the most out of that. So for me, I think recruiting is one, but obviously they need to continue to do some of that. But is there anything else that that maybe you think they need to do here in this season to help kind of line them up to at least be in some sort of positive direction or positive position to start gaining some sort of success going forward in the future in the Big Ten?
I think along with that is recruiting bigger in the trenches. That's going to be a big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the types of O-line and D-line in the Big Ten conference and running the ball and stopping the run are going to be, essential to being successful in that. I think skills were going to be top in the conference with the speed we have and the talent, even pass rushing wise. I think, yeah, the thing is beefing up in the interior is going to be a major key moving forward. And then I think the other two are going to be traveling in the weather. Like I said, the season's not going to really prepare them for the cold. And every time anybody talks to me about the Big Ten, it's like, what are y'all going to do when you're playing, in Michigan and
y'all got to buy a coat
October, early November, all these places. And my brother just started law school at Michigan, past, summer. And like, well, he's already told me about how cold it is. And he just went back for, they just started back up. And like, for what he's been telling me about how cold it is, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not ready for that. And I was playing in Canada. So I can imagine, California kids that haven't played outside the Pac-12, outside the West Coast,
right?
How's it going to be? Because even the non-conference this year is in-state, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where like, they're not going to Oklahoma. They're not going to Cincinnati. They're not going to Texas. So traveling and the weather, I think, are two things that are going to, have to start being, I wouldn't say the weather needs to be talked about, but traveling wise,
yeah,
and how they prepare the players and get them ready for that. But I mean, again, it's not really nothing that they can do this year that won't be able to start helping prepare for that for another year.
I think just too, with kind of a lot of what you said too, and I guess maybe kind of what I said, but again, I look at Dante Moore as an example. Now, 5-star quarterback, all that good stuff. But I think, again, getting, if you want bigger guys, like California is just not known for having big linemen on either side of the ball, which, to my point, like, you need to go outside of your region and recruit. Like, you need to, get into the Big Ten area. You need to go into the East Coast. You know, again, Dante Moore is from Michigan in that Big Ten area. So you need to get more guys from that area. The South. You need to get into the South. The islands, Samoa, wherever you got to go. Find some big bodies and bring them over. And because you're going to be playing big boy football. The Big Ten is all about running the ball and having these big bodies smash up against one another. So that, I mean, you're going to have to, you need to do that if you want to be successful. So you're going to have to expand your horizon in terms of what you do in terms of recruiting, I think, as well. So again, you mentioned the weather and stuff. When they give you guys all this gear, and again, I don't know when they give you all this, all the gear, all the shorts, all the shirts and all the stuff for traveling and your backpack and all that stuff. Do they give you guys a jacket or a coat? And if not, do you think they're going to have a UCLA branded puffy coat jacket and a rain jacket and all this other stuff now?
This one, okay. When we went to Under Armour, we didn't get really anything. Okay. So we got a backpack
do you get just one backpack
per year? Yeah. So going to the camp for Under Armour, we'd get a backpack.
Mm-hmm.
A hoodie and some sweatpants and some basketball shorts.
That's it.
We probably didn't get anything else until we got our travel like sweats.
Right.
But for Under Armour, that was pretty much it. They started giving stuff at the end because they were just giving stuff away. But like,
right,
we didn't get anything. Now I'll be seeing they get stuff like every other week they're getting stuff. So I imagine they're going to have all the stuff they need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be, I mean, early on, usually don't give as much like jackets and, stuff. But when it's going to be a cold game, then they're definitely going to get something in the cup.
Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be sending it out. So when you, so you can tell just on the pictures, the graphics, the team landed, for the game kind of stuff. Like in all those pictures, you could tell like it's different stuff, or it's like, we didn't have nothing like that. You get jealous.
100% and 100%. They had us out here in the Steph Curry that Steph Curry has never worn in his life.
Oh wow.
They had, you know, like even the colors, because I remember one of the things that we fought so hard for was like, they had us in these ugly grays. Like everything was like an ugly gray. It was like these random grays, and we were like, can we get like just black? Like, and like, I'm having meetings with Under Armour reps and all this and that, and like, it was, they couldn't do nothing for us. And I'm telling us like all the complaints that guys have, and it was a whole, I could go in on that. That was a whole different situation. But they had a little bit better stuff at the end. But now, me knowing a lot of guys on the team and seeing, like, I'm seeing all the stuff when they get something, it's, I see it, whether it's on some
right
form of social media, some group chat, I see the shoes, I see all the sweatsuits, all the different, like all the stuff they get. So of course I'm jealous, because we were getting nothing, and now they're getting everything. And I still haven't got a care package
or nothing,
not even a t-shirt.
I'm telling you, Josh, you had a crawl so that they can run now. That you know, everything you did was to benefit.
I was fighting
these
for
guys.
My life.
You couldn't even
like
get
an
a
army
shirt.
Crawl. Now they're out here skipping around, having fun
in just fields of sunflowers and daisies and everything else you could possibly think of. No, that's good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, no, I think you kind of nailed it. The weather, the travel, which I know is a big thing, and then the recruiting, as I mentioned, and you mentioned as well. I think we'll end it there. As I mentioned before we started answering questions, make sure you guys are reaching out to us. You can follow me on Twitter at JHW Reporter. Josh, where can they find you on Twitter or Instagram or both?
Twitter's _Woodsy_J. Instagram is Woodsy_J.
Mm-hmm. And all that will be in the description as well of the podcast, so you guys can find it there. And again, make sure you guys are reaching out. Feel free to leave questions, topic ideas, whatever you would like to hear us kind of talk about. Josh has been with the program for 5 years before. Obviously, he's not with them now, but he was with them for at least 5 years. So, you know, he has some knowledge on quite a few different things, even the struggle of just having so little merch or gear to wear. But that'll do it for us. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will be back next week with another episode, and we'll see what UCLA and the college football world will have in store for us. Then make sure you guys go ahead, as I mentioned, just keep checking the description. I'll have links for the schedule reveal. I'll probably be doing something on guys in the trend that we've gotten through the transfer portal at UCLA that have arrived at UCLA, and I'll be writing up a little something about each guy, so one, I can have a better understanding of who's who, but for you guys to follow along and kind of see who's who and what is what. With that being said, thank you guys so much, and we'll catch you guys in the next one. Thank you.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.